alcoholism, but we're on the fourth step, and we're at the point where we're going to look at the manifestations of self which caused us harm. Did anybody have manifestations of self that caused them harm? The problem is, for new people, they don't realize what they are. They just know that they're feelings, and they can't see that their life self-centered caused them to have wrong thinking. Anybody have wrong thinking? Anybody have it today? See, I didn't know my thinking was wrong when it came in here. I thought I was a pretty smart guy. You know, doctor, triple board certified, you know, I know my shit. And I, my thinking was totally distorted out of reality. I couldn't see the truth about my thinking, my resentments, my fears, the harms I did to other people, my conduct, the decisions I made based on self that harmed me and others. Anybody do that? So last week we went through the prayer on page 63, and the bottom of page 63 we went on what we do after we take the prayer if we want to change. Do we want to go through from the world of alcoholism to the world of the spirit? What do we have to do? Well, we have to get out of my world, and we have to make a decision to do that, and then we have to take actions to get into God's world. And the first action we take is the fourth step, where we look at our mind. We do a personal house cleaning, right? And we look at our thinking, and we face and be rid of the things in my mind and my thinking that block me from God. Now, why is that important to do? Because without God, I have no power. I have no power to live. And I don't want to be blocked from God each day and into myself. It says liquor was but a symptom of what? And we're going to talk about our spiritual illness. And it says, the decision I made in step 3 on the top of 64 was vital, which means necessary for life and crucial. It can't have any effects. So it's, taking step 3 is great, but unless at once you have a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things blocking you from God. You have to take action. AA is an action. It's not a getting smart program. It's learning everything you're wrong about. And so we had to get down to causes and conditions, and then we read these two paragraphs about a personal inventory. We inventory our personality. Now, a lot of people don't do the fourth step. A lot of people don't do it out of the big book. A lot of people do four steps that are on the internet. There's all sorts of, you can do the most in-depth four-step and analysis of yourself if you want. But the four-step in the big book is very concise, very clear, and it has certain goals. And they talk about, in that first paragraph on 64, we want to discover the truth about my stock and trade, and I want to disclose my damaged or unsaleable goods. In other words, I want to get rid of the things in my mind that aren't true and are killing me. Remember, my mind is like a Target store getting ready for Christmas. And if I want to make money in Christmas, I got to put the stuff on the shelves that's good and get rid of the stuff that's bad. Remember, Joe and Charlie make the point that our mind, when we come into AA, is like a 7-Eleven or a Quick Shop. Mm-hmm. And when you walk into the store, you see all those goods on the aisles, and that's our resentments. And then you see everything in the freezers, and that's our fear, and in the back is our shame and guilt. And if our mind's that 7-Eleven, how can God work in that mind? It doesn't have any power. So the fourth step is the first time where we learn these spiritual tools to be able to look at our thinking. And it says we're going to do the same thing with my life. I'm going to take stock of my life honestly. And I really want to see the truth. I forgot to say the set-aside prayer, so I'm going to say it. God, set aside everything I think I know about myself, the big book, the steps, recovery, what's best for me, what's best for others. Please help me live on your truth. Amen. So I need to set aside, and the fourth step is the beginning of the setting aside of all my old ideas. So I'm going to search out the flaws in my makeup, which we call our character defects, which cause their failure. They all arise out of my self-centeredness, and the reason I know that, because it says being convinced that self manifested in various ways, defeated me. Does anybody agree with that? Now, when they're talking about self, they're talking about my self-centered thinking. What I think I need to be happy. What I think I need to satisfy my instincts of life. Did anybody think they had good motives? My motives were always good, right? But they were always self-centered. And so it defeated me. Was anybody defeated when they come in here? I hope you were, because if you're not, you're not gonna do the deal. We have to have complete defeat, by the way. And I was completely defeated by my self-centeredness. So the fourth step is where we're just gonna look at the manifestations, which means how it looked of my self-centeredness, so I can face and be rid of these things and see the truth about them. Now, there are three things we're gonna learn that are very important in the fourth step. If you haven't learned it, you need to do another one. The first thing we have to learn is how to be freedom from anger. Anybody think that's a good idea? Yeah. Anger's a killer. Yeah. So we learn how to be free from anger, and then we learn how to be free from fear. Boy, that's a blessing, isn't it? And then we learn how to have sane sex conduct and sane relationship conduct, so we're not harming people. So the first thing we look at, and if you look at 64 and then you take your book and you go to 71, it's just these number of pages. Can anybody hold that? It's not too heavy, is it? Anybody can pull this up, right? If you do this, you'll see the truth and you'll have tools to live by. So it starts with resentment, which is misunderstood. Resentment just means anger, refeeling anger. Now, there's several types of resentment. There are deep-seated resentment that you've had for years. And there are deep-seated resentments you've had for years that you don't even think about all the time, but they're there. Then there's the resentment you get every day, like if you have to wait in line, and somebody's in front of you with coupons, and you're Michael the Magnificent, you don't have time to wait for them, and they can't get the card in that reader, you know, and it's just taking forever. And yeah, I mean, so we get angry, but we stay angry. So the definition for me of resentment is, I can get upset, but if I stay upset, for me it used to be 5 minutes, but now that I've been in recovery a while, I give myself 30 seconds. If I'm upset for more than 30 seconds, then I have to do the prayers and do the spiritual tools. I don't want to be angry anymore. And we're going to read on the next pages that anger is never justified. It's poison. It's going to kill us. You think they minced any words here? No. Now, resentment is the number one offender. So it's the number one offense that's manifested by self. And what does it offend? It offends my relationship with the world and with God, right? And it's number one. And so it's to mean to refeel anger, to stay angry, to be disturbed. Now, resentment can also mean to be irritated or frustrated, judgmental. Any judgers in here? Anybody good at it? I was very good at it. I was so good at it that it made me miserable. Anybody new to AA? Anybody remember when you were new to AA and you go to meetings and you know what's wrong with everybody in the room? Mm-hmm. Anybody else do that? Was I the only one?
Not first.
I don't do it as much anymore, but occasionally I'll see somebody who needs some work. And so this
well, yeah.
So this judgment, yeah, this judgment never goes away, you know. Someday Ed needs work, and someday I need work. And the judgment never goes away, but we want to see how they're wrong. Resentment is just wrong judgment. We're judging something wrong, and we get angry about it. And so we're going to see, because it says in step five, we want to admit to God, another human being, myself, the exact nature of my wrongs. So what are the wrongs that they're talking about? You don't have to admit that you committed adultery 100 times. You might be tired, but it's why you committed adultery. What was the wrong thinking? If you rob a bank, Joe and Charlie says, we don't care if you robbed it 100 times. Why did you rob the bank? What was the wrong thinking that led to that? And the three wrongs we interview, we look at in step four is resentment, which is wrong judgment, fear, which is wrong belief, and our harmful conduct where we harmed other people, our wrong behavior. It says it destroys more alcoholics than anything else. You think that's a strong enough statement? Now, how do you destroy an alcoholic? It destroys us because we can't live sober in the world if we're angry. And then we seek the release and comfort of something. Anybody find alcohol would relieve that at some point, or drugs? The problem is, at least for me and other people, it stops working after a while. So the key to that is not to get angry, right? And not to judge. Or when we judge, to realize we're wrong and take steps to change the way we see it through God. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. So we have a spiritual disease. We like to say alcoholism is a disease. But when people talk about that, they don't understand it's a spiritual disease. And now, disease means dis-ease. And what I am is dis-ease with my spirit. I'm out of order, out of ease with God. And it's a spiritual dis-ease, and so I have to get back to conscious contact with God and ease with God. Does this make sense? Now, how do I get at dis-ease with God? Do I wake up in the morning and God says, you're dis-ease with me, Michael. What's wrong with you? No, I do it in my own mind. Does anybody else do that? We start thinking about ourselves and our little plans and, you know, what went wrong yesterday and what's going to go wrong tomorrow and this and that. We do it in our mind. I'm the one that separates myself from God. I'm the one that causes the disease. And that's what this card's all about. I lived in this world where I played God. Anybody else do that? Separated from God. And I was at disease with the world. Anybody have conflict with the world? So it says, I have not been only mentally and physically ill, I have been spiritually sick. Now, I was physically ill because I had an allergy of the body, right? And when I took alcohol, I was in trouble. I was also physically ill with the world, the physical world. I was in conflict with everybody. Anybody have that? People you were scared, you were afraid to see because you harmed them? Now, how was I mentally ill? Well, still am to some extent. My wife just told me that yesterday. But mentally ill, my thinking was off. I couldn't see, my thinking was not right. I couldn't see the truth about alcohol. Anybody else have that problem? Right before we drank, we thought it was a good idea. And what else were we mentally ill about? We believed our thinking. I believed my judgments and I believed my fears. And I made decisions that I thought were good, right? And so I was mentally ill because my thinking wasn't centered in God. And so then I'd been spiritually ill. So alcoholism is a spiritual disease. It's a disease of separation from God in people who are very self-centered. Remember, we are the all pros. We are the NFL Pro Bowl team of self-centered people. And when we are that way, we don't feel good. And we harm people, we have shame and guilt, we have fear, and we have anger, and we drink. Now, you can stay sober and not drink in AA and still be spiritually sick. I don't recommend it. It's not a good way to live. And that the steps are designed for you to live in peace sober. Without the steps, you might not drink. I can't speak for you. But you won't have any peace. Now, we read the 9-step promises a lot of meetings. We don't listen here, read them here, because I want to talk too much. That was a joke for our new people. But the 9-step promises come true after you've done steps 4 through 9, and you have some peace and serenity in a relationship with God. Step 10 is how you stay in that relationship all day long. And 11, how you use prayer and meditation to use the tools in 10. So it says, in dealing with... So when the spiritual malady is overcome, I automatically straighten out mentally and physically. Well, I'm not drinking. I'm not harming people. I'm not scared of, don't have fear of people anymore, the physical world. I can see the truth about my thinking, right? And so there's a lot. So just overcoming the spiritual separation straightens me out. Now remember, it says on page 77, we're trying to put our lives in order. Anybody remember that? It says that's what we're trying to do. And we're putting our lives in order with God in steps 1, 2, 3, our mind with 4 through 7, and the world in 8 and 9. But remember, the next line says, this is not the end in itself. Our real purpose, what's my real purpose in AA, is to fit myself to be of maximal service to God and others. So I have to fit myself. And how do I fit myself? By working the steps and staying with God all day long. And if I'm with God all day long, I'm going to serve God and others and not Michael. And I won't be getting as angry or fearful, and I won't harm people. So here's these are very complicated instructions on what you do first. This is very complicated. See if you can follow this. In dealing with resentments, we put them on paper. Isn't that complicated? You write out and put on paper all of your resentments. Now, a lot of people tell me they don't have any resentments. I've seen a lot of new people. They've never gotten angry. I don't know what's wrong with them. Maybe they're brain dead. I don't understand that. But I don't think they see it. They don't see their anger. You know why? Because they're angry all the time. So it's the water they swim in. A lot of people say, I'm never afraid. Well, you know, the two fish are in the water, and they go, where's the water? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I swam in fear. I mean, it was my whole life. And so we swim in it. We don't see it. The step 4 helps you put them on paper. So if you don't have any resentments, you find somebody's done this, you sit down with them. And then what I usually say, well, did you have parents? Yes, put them on the list. Did you have any brothers or sisters? Put them on the list. Did you ever have anybody at school you didn't like? Put them on the list. Any teachers, anybody you ever encountered in high school, anybody you worked with, any relationships, just put the names down. Because if you're alcoholic, you had some issue with all of them, usually. And then you can help them look at that. So you put them on paper. That's not very hard, is it? And then you list people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. So it doesn't say that you're not angry with them anymore. Anybody with whom you were angry. Anybody. Why? Now, you don't have to do a perfect guy. One guy wanted to do 300 names. You know, he was going through his employee files to make sure he didn't miss anybody. They're not talking about that. They want you to be thorough, but you're going to see a pattern. What you're supposed to see from this, and I saw it, is I was angry all the time. You know, it was just a constant state where people bothered me and they would frustrate me. And we want to see how we live like that and then the result of it, what it caused us. So we ask ourselves why we were angry. So you write whom you were angry. Then the second column, there's 4 columns, is the cause, why you were angry. Now that's not very hard. Now we suggest that you do the names first. That's the way Joe and Charlie talked about the second. And that's what they say, do the names first. And then do what they did. Now, don't spend a lot of time on what they did. I've had some guys write like 2 paragraphs about the ex-wife. I mean, 2 pages. Please, that's not important. Because you're going to see when you do this that what they actually did may not even have been true. It's just the way you reacted to it. And so we don't want to spend a lot of time on what they did because we're really interested in why we were angry and what we did. But you put it down. And that's very helpful because you could take somebody who's been angry at like mother for their whole life and they write why they're angry and then they do the third column and I said, well, you know, and they give me all these reasons. I said, well, did she change your diaper? You know, did she take you to kindergarten? Did she make sure you had food on the table? You see what I mean? You help them change the way they see mom. The mom was just a human being. She did the best she could. And you can see anger and frustration of years just melt away. I mean, people have worked with, I've done a lot of 4 steps with people. It's the greatest gift is to be able to see that. And then it helps me see how I changed my attitude towards people too. So you ask yourselves why you're angry. And then the third column is what was affected. Now, I didn't understand this. I went to meetings for years before I listened to Joe and Charlie. I have to be threatened in some way to be angry at someone. It has to threaten me, cause fear in me in some way. And self-esteem is how I feel about myself. And does this person make me feel good or bad about myself? And it's because I have low self-esteem, or my esteem's so high it's always threatened. Was my money affected? My ambitions on what I think I needed? My personal relationships, including sex. So remember, we had that chart on the three instincts of life. I don't have one for the new people, but there's sex instinct, material instinct, and emotional instinct, right? And we decide when we're self-centered what we need in our sex life, our material life, and emotional life. And then we become dependent on what we think we need to be happy. And then when we don't get it, we get upset, right? It says we're hurt or threatened, so we were sore. We were burned up. Now, who makes yourself get threatened? See, I do. That's what I've learned from the fourth step. That if I'm threatened by someone, it's because I'm back in me and Michael. And what God wouldn't be threatened by this person, right? So if I'm not being connected to God, practicing love and tolerance, I'm going to be threatened. And so I have to change the way I look at the world. And the way I do that is whenever I get threatened, I say, well, Michael, you're back in self again. Get out of that. God, how should I see this? It's not complicated. This isn't rocket science. And it says, so we were sore, we were burned up. And it says, on our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it my self-esteem, again, my security, my ambitions, my personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? And then they have these three examples. And they're great, by the way. I think you could summarize everybody's whole anger towards the world in these four examples. He doesn't like Mr. Brown. Now, you're listening. This is a guy at a meeting. You ever go to a meeting where somebody talks about their resentment? And so somebody says, you know, that Mr. Brown, he's paying attention to my wife. We say, oh, that's terrible. That Mr. Brown, we need to execute him. Told my wife of my mistress. What a son of a bitch. Why would he do that? Brown may get my job at the office. Now, you're listening to that, and that seems very reasonable that you would really be angry at Mr. Brown, right? It affects his sex relationships. It affects his self-esteem, how he fears of it. And he's afraid because he's afraid of losing his wife or losing his job. You see, fear is behind all of my anger. His sex relationships, again, and his security. Whenever we're threatened and we have fear, our self-esteem, our pride, our security, our ambitions, we get upset. All right, so what's the truth of this? He's mad at Brown because he pays attention to my wife. So the guy, you're sitting with somebody, you're doing the four step. He says, well, you have a mistress. You're with your mistress. Mr. Brown's paying attention to your wife because you're not home. Wow. Brown may get my job at the office. Why? I'm drunk all the time. I never show up to work. I'm with my mistress all the time. You see? And so you can help somebody see it differently. And so that's the fourth column. And it's not in the book. That's on the next page. But what we usually do is the first three columns first. Then I go through it and I look at it with somebody. So if he was paying more attention to his wife and didn't have a mistress and he didn't drink and he showed up to work, Mr. Brown wouldn't be in the picture, right? And so he's mad at Mr. Brown, but he's really upset with himself and his behavior. And let's look at Mrs. Jones. She's a nut. Who decides that? She snubbed me. How did he decide that, you see? Anybody else get snubbed by somebody who doesn't say anything to him? You know what I mean? We just decide that we're getting snubbed. She committed her husband for drinking, and he's my friend, and she's a gossip. Well, it affects his personal relationships, his self-esteem, but what's the truth? Her husband was drunk. He needed to be committed. She's a gossip because she's gossiping about him the whoever wrote this, because he has a mistress and he's not showing up to work. You see, and the fact that she snubbed him is the way he relates to that. Now here's another really good one. This employer, he needs to be executed too. He's unreasonable. He's unjust. He's overbearing. Threatens to fire me for drinking. So everybody says, yeah, you need to really, this guy's an asshole. And padding my expense account. Now, alcoholics can actually say that. They can write this out and think it's very reasonable that their employer is just a monster. It affects their self-esteem and fear because, you know, they're, people are going to look at him, he's going to get fired, and he's in his security. But what's the truth? He's drunk all the time, but he stole money. So we're drunk all the time. We don't show up for work. We steal money, and we're angry at the boss that they're unreasonable. And you know what's the sad thing? We believe it. And when we tell somebody, it makes perfect sense. That's why at a lot of our new meetings, we have a lot, you know, a lot of new people, and they're just blabbering away all their resentments. And you know, sometimes just somebody needs to say, you know, why don't you talk about that after the meeting to someone? Because we don't want to hear somebody's resentments. It's just their alcoholism. It's untreated alcoholism. We want to see the solution. So when we see that at a meeting, you need to go afterwards and say, you know, have you done the four steps? Would you like to talk about this and help them out? Because we don't want them to live in that world, because then they'll drink. And so, look at his wife. She misunderstands me. What a ding-a-ling. She nags me. She likes Brad. He doesn't even know that, probably. What's the house put in her name? I love that one. It affects his pride, right? His wife's going to leave him. His personal sex relations and security, they could lose money, and it's all fear. Well, what's the truth? She nags him because he's never home, and he's having an affair, and he's drunk all the time. And she wants the house put in her name because he's afraid that he's going to lose it. Yeah, it's not his fault. So, I hope that was helpful. I'm going to just read one more paragraph. And Mark made fun of me the other night because he says when I read one more paragraph, I do a whole page. But I'm only going to do one more paragraph. We went back through our lives. So you go back through your life. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. Now, the other thing is you're not going to be graded because alcoholics want to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And this isn't going to be read at a meeting and people are going to judge you. And the whole world's not watching you do this. It's just you want to do the best you can with where you are in your recovery. If you're early, sometimes you can't see a lot. When we were finished, we consider it carefully. So you do these first three columns. The first thing apparent was the world and its people were often quite wrong. That's why we were angry at him, right? And so we had to conclude that others was wrong was as far as most of us got. That's why we're angry, right? The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Now, who decided that they wronged us? See, we did. It's in our mind. We don't know that they actually wronged us. And then we're mad at them. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we're sore at ourselves. And we're sore at ourselves for putting ourselves in the position to be hurt. But the more I fought and tried to have my only way, the worse matters got, as in war the victor only seemed to win. See, the more you get angry and you try to get back at him, you seem to win, but you're just killing yourself. Our moments of triumph were short-lived, and I'll end with this line. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. And we'll pick up with that next week. Now, next week is going to be, actually won't be next week, I'm going to be visiting grandkids the following week. These 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the next 5 paragraphs are the most important things I've ever read in my whole life. It's how I get free of anger. How many times have I gone through this, guys? I've been here a million times. Does it help anybody in this room? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. These. So we're going to go through that next week, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs. So thank you, and I welcome my new guy from Washington, and hope you enjoyed it. We've been doing this, I've done 1,400 of these meetings now. So thank you for coming. All right, we'll open it up. I'm sure somebody has some resentment they could talk about.